Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. Finding the Greatest Secrets. I love the way a rainbow forms by sunlight entering a water droplet and bending as it moves from air to water. The light reflects and separates into a beautiful arrangement of color. I know it's science, but that doesn't mean it isn't magical. Because I'm intrigued by rainbows, I always pause when I see them. When my kids were much younger, we enjoyed spinning stories inspired by rainbows. What is at the end? What might it be like to ride down it like a slide? What would happen if we could get close enough to look through it? In my corner of the world, we are in a season of rainbows. Now that the boys are teenagers, they no longer spin rainbow stories with me. Sam likes to remind me of the science of light whenever I allow a rainbow to capture my attention. Jordan usually has something more pressing to do than watch a rainbow. Imagine my surprise when in the thick of the morning routine, I heard Jordan's deep voice, "Mom, there's a rainbow in the backyard." I went outside to the back deck to stand and stare. As Roald Dahl wrote, "And above all, watch with glittering eyes the whole world around you, because the greatest secrets are always hidden in the most unlikely places. Those who don't believe in magic will never find it." I thought about those words as I soaked in the pleasure of a perfect rainbow. "It's getting brighter," Jordan said. I looked around, but didn't see him. "Up here," he called, and waved at me from his bathroom window. "It's good to start the day with a rainbow," he said before closing the window. Sam came out to the back deck, a towel wrapped around his waist because he was fresh from the shower. "That's a good one," he said. "You know, it's just light reflecting from the inside of water droplets. It's because it moves from air to water that it slows down and bends." "Yeah, I know," I responded. Sam was content to stare in silence at the rainbow. I like to think it's a little bit of magic, though. It's the kind of magic that surrounds us in schools and classrooms and virtual spaces with kids. If we watch with glittering eyes, we will find the greatest secrets hidden in the most unlikely places. Pandemic teaching is an unlikely place to find magical moments, but they exist. This week, we share more hidden treasures that can be found in literacy instruction, even during an unlikely school year. I do hope you'll take the time to discover some in your corner of the world. Share them by tagging us on social media at Choice Literacy and hashtag Choice Literacy Hidden Treasures. I'm so thrilled about our hidden treasure theme. I feel like it is exactly what we need right now in education. This week, in Free for All, we offer an article from Dana Murphy. It was written pre-COVID, and Dana shares the way she moved anchor charts to a sketchbook and a website for chart images just to improve the quality of her charts and their usefulness. Stella Vialba shares three strategies teachers and literacy coaches can use to pause, recenter, and renew themselves throughout busy, stressful days in schools. Stella wrote this last year when we first entered lockdown. You won't want to miss Matt Renwick's article on his Substack newsletter, where he unfolds a classroom visit and shares the way he was reminded that the reading and writing are taught by our actions as much as any strategy we might use. Matt selected this month's book club pick. It's Neville by Norton Juster and illustrated by G. Brian Karras. This is one of the easiest, most low-pressure book clubs you can ever be a part of. Join the conversation by using the hashtag ChoiceLiteracyBookClub and also hop on over to the course called Book Club. Now, we know it's a club, not a course, but that's where it is on the website. You'll find a Padlet as well as a few articles by Matt just to inspire you as an educator. I hope that you'll grab a copy of Neville and join us in the conversation. We have excellent content for our Classic Classroom members. Gretchen Schrader, a high school teacher, made the leap to digital notebooks this year as she was in remote teaching. She found new life in a tried and true practice and can't wait to continue it as she teaches in traditional ways. Tara Barnett and Kate Mills consider the power of asynchronous lessons in creating a student-centered learning environment. You don't want to miss the ways that they are thinking about flipping their instruction and how to create solid digital lessons. Gwen Blumberg teaches an asynchronous lesson for a spelling strategy in this week's video. Gwen is a new contributor, but not new to the field. You will love watching her instruction. In an Encore article, Tammy Mulligan finds shared writing is her go-to strategy for teaching young learners online. Just in case you missed it earlier, we brought it back. We have field experience courses on the site. We think that classroom observations are some of the most valuable learning experiences, and we have thousands of videos on the site. Now you can access them according to topics and grade levels in more than 15 unique field experiences. In our Leaders Lounge, we offer a brand new PD to go. It's about reflective practice and goal setting. I think that right now is a great time to help educators wrap their arms around professional learning. We've been overwhelmed, and one of the things that we've let go off our plate often is professional learning. I tend to believe that for educators, professional learning is a form of self-care. In this PD to go session, participants will consider the positive outcomes after a year of pandemic teaching and use them as inspiration for setting professional goals. Everything you need to lead a session is at your fingertips. If you haven't had a chance to check out the contributor courses, now is the time. It's all about empowering choice, even in uncertain times like the 2020-2021 school year. These contributor courses are chocked full of hidden treasures. Jen Schwanke encourages leaders to consider how to give a daily morale boost in her new article. She joins the podcast so that we could talk a little bit more about the hidden treasures that stemmed from pandemic teaching, as well as her new book, all about re-energizing teachers. Jen Schwanke is an elementary principal in Dublin, Ohio. She has been teaching and leading for over 20 years. She's the author of two books, You're the Principal, Now What? Strategies and Solutions for New School Leaders, and The Principal Reboot, 8 Ways to Revitalize Your School Leadership. Jen writes for Choice Literacy, Education Week, Principal and Principal Navigator. She presents at conferences across the nation. Jen also is an instructor in the Educational Administration Program at Miami University and a doctoral student at The Ohio State University. You can reach out to her on Twitter at Jen Schwanke or on her website, jenschwanke.com. Jen, I'm glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. Welcome.
Hi, Ruth. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you've been active in encouraging leaders to find the good in the last year. And it's just been a year where there's been one unexpected thing after another. And you keep writing articles that we've been publishing on the site about holding on to a mindset of gratitude and positivity. This week, you have a new article and you open with acknowledging the hard things pandemic teaching has brought, but also encourage us to be grateful. You have a line about asking people to find gratitude in the middle of a hard season is the equivalent of telling someone to calm down when angry. yet you push through with encouraging gratitude. Tell us why this is your way forward.
You're exactly right. I really liken it to when you're angry or upset and someone says, calm down. I get very angry, more angry when I'm told to relax in a time of high emotion. My husband and I actually joke about it because early in our marriage, he would say that to me. He'd say, you need to relax. And I would want to explode, right? But now he will joke and he'll say, now's not a good time to tell you to calm down, is it? And I will say, no. And similarly, I get really annoyed when people tell me in a time of distress or depression that I need to feel gratitude. I have a experience with this with one of my supervisors several years ago. I was in a dark, dark time and I was struggling professionally and personally. And I was, you know, coming out with this information. And the supervisor said to me, you know, you need to get a gratitude journal. And I wanted to pop because I thought I have nothing to be grateful for. But the point to all this is we really do. And we really do need to relax and feel gratitude, right? But we need to do it during the times when we are not heightened or anxious or upset. It's a lot like putting money in the bank in that sense. So if you relax before you need to relax, or if you are grateful before you need those feelings of gratitude, then you can conjure them up when they're needed. So, you know, similarly, gratitude happens when you're overcome with the gifts you've been given, not when you feel they've been taken away. So for me, gratitude is about remembering the things I have to be grateful for in those moments where it kind of washes over you. And so then when things get really hard, having practiced that earlier helps me remember, you know, Jen, it's not always like this. Just last week, you were remembering all the gifts you've been given. And I say all that just because it is the mindset I tried to bring to my leadership and my work with literacy teachers and all teachers really, is we have to bank that, those feelings of goodwill and generosity and gratitude and peace, inner peace, so that we can pull them up when we need them.
That makes a lot of sense because I'm thinking about that recent article about COVID, what I'll keep. And you do just kind of put forth all the things that have been rocky this year. And then you say the things that have just been gifts of the year, things that we're better at that we wouldn't have been if we hadn't walked through the hard times. How do you find those things?
That's a great question. I'm going to take a risk here and be vulnerable and say, as scary and awful and frightening as COVID was, I think there are so many things that came out of it that made us better and stronger and more available for our students and our families. So how do you find them? To me, the answer is quite simple. You just look. And when, you know, the news cycle is always dire and the politics are frightening and divisive, you can choose to stay in that swamp, or you can dig out and say, what is it that is still amazing? And what is still happening that is better than ever? And I looked around my school and I was blown away every day, Ruth. Every day I thought, I am seeing resilience and perseverance, and I am seeing resources, and I'm seeing technology used in ways it never was before. And I don't think we would have taken some of the leaps we took if it hadn't been for COVID. I think it was a way to shake us up and make us really insist on, by golly, teaching. You know, we're going to teach, we're going to do this in spite of all the barriers put in front of us.
Yes. And it comes out in your writing. You know, I'm seeing you on the page and I'm looking at your articles and imagining what life is like in your corner of the world there in Central Ohio. So you have this new article out about your administrative assistant who's sending a GIF out to the staff each day. And it starts this conversation and people are talking about it each day. And what it made me think the first time I read it, Jen, was the way your attitude and your mindset is contagious. And it's this simple thing that she's doing, but it really made a big difference in the school.
Absolutely. It's such a small thing. As a matter of fact, when I wrote that article, I thought, it seems a little bit silly. I don't know that I should be sharing all of this about this little action that Jenny takes every day. But I'm telling you, it is a culture boon for us. It's a way that we can laugh. It's a way that she can capture the feeling of the day. She puts a picture to the emotions that we're feeling. And it is such a, again, a culture builder, because it brings us together. And again, I'm not advocating for everybody to go out and tell their administrative assistant to please send out a GIF every day. That's not the point. The point is every building needs to have something that they do together. And whether that is look at an image and laugh or talk or have a conversation piece that they can carry with them together, it's a wonderful way to bring us together, especially during this tricky time. You know, it's been a tough year. And to remember, hey, we're all in this together. It's really helpful and starts the day off right. It's beautiful.
And it's the small thing that she can do. And it might not be the same small thing that everybody's going to do, but I loved how she felt empowered enough just to do it. And you reference in the article how, you know, it's not from the principal. So that has a whole different shift there in the culture.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I can stand up all I want and say, hey, everybody, be grateful. Hey, everybody, let's find joy. Hey, everybody, let's find laughter. But then it feels like a mandate, right? And it doesn't feel authentic. And nobody likes to feel emotion on command. I hate feeling emotion on command. It's exactly like when someone tells me to relax, right? And so when it comes from a member of the team who's right there in the trenches with us, it has a lot more meaning. And you're right. She did it on her own and she felt empowered to do it on her own. And, you know, the article references how people will walk through the office and talk about it all day. And then the cycle begins again the next day. So it's a great deal of fun.
You pay attention to those connections and relationships. And you do that within the school, but you often nudge us to consider family connections and relationships. What have you learned in the last year about building strong relationships with families?
I've always felt like family relationships and the connection to the community needs to be a priority. But boy, I got an entirely new view of it in this past year. We spent time in the living rooms of our families. You know, we had cameras, we were talking to them about what they needed in terms of technology or schedules or supports. And so the relationship in a lot of ways became more intimate between school and home. And that doesn't mean that Jen, the principal or the instructional leader, knows every environment or is closely tied to every family. What it means is the people in my building are. And they, again, it's about empowerment and about letting people know that that is our role and that I support it 100%. And I think too about that, you know, that phrase, we all know it, we've heard it, that we should always be kind because we never know what someone else is carrying. That is truly one of the guiding lights of my work. Every family has a story. Every family is carrying something heavy, maybe even not in that moment, but they are and they have and they will. And that doesn't mean that we relax expectations or that we give everyone a pass when things get hard. That's not what it means at all. It just means that we acknowledge there is a story behind every soul. And to build a connection between a school that might have hundreds of students in it and the community in which only some of the homes have students in them, it can still happen if we acknowledge that every front door has a story behind it. And similarly, in our schools are made up of teachers who are all carrying things that are heavy, and support staff and systems and processes and mandates that make things complicated. But to just remember that everybody has their story really helps me to reinforce to within myself and with our staff that the relationship with families is what's going to bring us together, because it's our common bond.
It is. There's such wisdom in just remembering the stories that, you know, that we don't see, but we have to remind ourselves that they're still there. You have this passion for bringing energy into schools and giving energy to people. So in the middle of the pandemic, you have a brand new book that came out, right? It's called Principal Reboot, 8 Ways to Revitalize Your School Leadership. And Jen, I'm so happy for you. And I also love the timing of it, right? Because it can seem like, oh my goodness, in the middle of all this really heavy and unprecedented times, you have this book that comes out. And to me, it's the heart of who you are. So it's called Principal Reboot, 8 Ways to Revitalize Your School Leadership. And it's really a tribute to the way you lead, constantly looking for ways to add energy and just overall good vibes to your school culture. What's your best piece of advice for those looking to re-energize their schools?
Ruth, that's a great question, and I'm so glad you asked it. I do want to acknowledge that this might be the worst book release date in the history of man. Obviously not planned, but March 17th was the day that most schools shut down. And at the time, I was despondent. I thought, oh, we're not going to sell any of these books, and nobody's going to know what I said about all this. But what's ironic and a little bit of, you know, serendipity is the book is a lot about rebooting your leadership during hard times and coming together with your staff and avoiding burnout and really making sure that all your knives are sharp, so to speak, in how you lead. And the piece of advice for those looking to re-energize their classroom or their schools for me would actually be know yourself the best that you can. There's this wonderful phrase, and it's called, and it goes, if the principal has a cold, the entire school has a cold. Or if the teacher has a cold, the entire class has a cold. And what is meant by that is if you're feeling exhausted or bored, the rest of your class or the rest of the school is gonna feel that. They're gonna pick up on it. If you're scared, others will share your fear. And so it's very difficult to look within. I know that better than anyone. But I think it's only difficult if you're looking with a lens of criticism. If you look within yourself with kindness, then you might be able to find where your deficits are. And there's never one huge overriding thing to work on, right? It changes. And so as an example, this fall, I was working on considering the mental health and anxieties of our parents, our teachers, and students. This spring, I'm working on having more fun. That was something I talked about in the book about, you know, making sure that we're enjoying our work, right? Like who wants to go spend 8 or 9 or 10 hours a day in misery? And so I have done silly things that I haven't done before in the past. Believe it or not, I dressed like the member of the band Europe, and I parodied the Final Countdown to bring some energy and sass to our school. So I think that the important thing is to look within and say, okay, what is it that's bringing me down right now? And who or what or how can I overcome that deficit to bring energy and life back to my work? If you look within yourself and you see someone who's beaten down and anxious and insecure, that's what you work on, because confidence in teaching or leading is really the way to share your gift with others.
Well, I do believe that you dressed up to add a little sass to the day. Even more so, I can see that as it was happening a year ago, it felt like a terrible release date. Really, Jen, I think that this is a book that every leader can get their hands on. I know it's called Principal Reboot. As I was reading it through the lens of an instructional coach, I just feel like there's so much wisdom there for people who are in leadership roles in a school. And especially right now, as we're moving back in and figuring out what school is going to look like, you know, going forward, there's just so much wisdom in it and a little bit of whimsy, which is lovely.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ruth. It is my editor and I joke, we have to stop titling my books with the word principal, because then a lot of other educators think it's not for them. But so maybe that'll be the next project.
Yeah, exactly. So you have been a longtime contributor to Choice Literacy. You've been writing for years, and I remember the first time that I met you, I just couldn't believe I was in the same room as Jen Schwanke, because you have written so much on the site, and you encourage principals to be literacy leaders. What I'd really like to hear you comment on is how you're supporting teachers in offering choice to students in their literacy instruction.
You know, I remember the first time as a teacher that I was first given the power to offer choice. I'll never forget it. I was teaching seventh grade language arts, and we were all 119 students that I had on my roster were all reading the same book. And someone, a curriculum director at the time, a dear friend and mentor, Jill, pushed me to think differently. And I'm going to be honest here. I was angry. I was very defensive. And I thought, you know what? Fine. I'll do it. I'll let those kids read whatever they want. We'll see how this works out. Well, guess what? It was wonderful. It was rich. And we had these conversations about books, honestly, that I'd never read. And I found all this energy and incredible capacity for thought and conversation with my students. And so I still use that lesson in my leadership, because I think for a leader, the job of leading through choice, of leading choice, is in presenting the concept of choice and what it means, and then getting out of the way. I want teachers to know that choice doesn't mean a reckless abandon of oversight, right? That's not what it is at all. It means guardrails. So as a teacher, we want our students to be on a road trip, right? They're going to drive wherever they want to go. But as the teacher, I'm going to be here and I'm going to help you navigate your road trip. And once those guardrails are up, that's when a student's freedom and autonomy kick in, right? So that's exactly how I look at it as a principal working with teachers. I give them the concept of choice, or they already have it in most cases, and I can be the guardrails and I let them drive. So what do the guardrails look like as a principal or an instructional coach or a leader? It looks like resources. I have never, not once in my leadership career, said no to a teacher who wants to buy a book, ever, not ever. And I hope that on my retirement day, I say that as well. If a teacher needs or wants a book, I will move a mountain to find that book. The other thing I think that a principal leading toward choice has to do is be a listening ear. So if a teacher isn't sure, I want them to come to me to talk through a book or a resource or a need. This has been a year where teachers have really tried to expand their own thinking about choice, but thinking in an echo chamber isn't healthy, right? It's not wise. And so I want to be the person that they come and talk to and coach through them. I think taking risks with texts in the name of choice is not wise. Taking risks with choice is not wise. Teaching with choice is all about intention. And so if I am an intentional leader with the way I talk about choice, and then I empower teachers to be intentional with their choice, that's when we really can make steps. And if we remember as educators, the moment that we first had that freedom to use choice in our classrooms, remembering that feeling is what we can aspire to going forward.
It makes so much sense, right? If we're going to expect teachers to offer choice with students, then they need to have some choice as well. And just that experience allows us to teach even stronger.
Right. I think there can be a misconception out there about what choice is in instruction. And again, it's not recklessness and it's not like, go pick a book. You know, it doesn't work that way. The teacher needs to be there to help students make intentional choices and then to understand how to differentiate the response to a reader or a writer. And, you know, as a young person, I think I and many other young people wanted that teacher's eye on me. I wanted that person who knew what I was doing with my literacy choices. And there's a great deal of comfort to be found in having a teacher that knows and understands that choice doesn't mean, you know, you're on your own. It doesn't mean that at all. It means we're here and we're going to keep you on your road trip. And if you need anything, I'm here to catch you.
It's a beautiful way to approach it. Jen, I'm so glad that you took some time to talk with us and just let us hear a little bit more of your thinking, get to know you behind your articles and behind your books. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And a big shout out and hello to all the choice members of this community. I think we've been through a really amazing time this past year, and I'm so glad to be part of this community.
At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.